Hey everyone, welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their film funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. Our winter 2021 narrative and documentary contests are now closed as of last night. Thank you to everyone who entered. Please stay tuned to your email for updates on the judging process. We want to remind listeners that contests do happen regularly, so if you missed this one or if you're listening at a later date, check the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Today we have Evan Kidd on the show, an award-winning filmmaker from Roxette Productions. His work has been screened by Film Independent, BET, MTV Jams, and more. Evan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Could you give us a little background yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Thomas. My name's Evan. I make movies from North Carolina, a little bit outside of the Hollywood system, if you will. Like you mentioned, a lot of different funding resources, but we always try and find a way to get them to the bigger audience possible. And at the end of the day, that's the goal of our storytelling and the goal of pretty much everything we're setting out to do. I've done both narrative and documentary, and I think I just enjoy kind of the balance between the two, telling personal stories. A lot of times, you know, in North Carolina, we'll find different stories that aren't being highlighted as much, things you may not hear about, characters you may not see as often. And yeah, we just try to balance everything out and tell stories you're maybe not always hearing about. So,
yeah, I noticed your work spans different genres, narrative, doc, and music videos, corporate videos. What's your favorite type of project to work on and why?
I think for me, I pivot between a narrative doc, a narrative and doc. And I think the reason is they're just so different that I get reinvigorated by one when I go back to the other. So a lot of times I'll do a documentary, maybe something a little more verite, and I'll bring some of those camera approaches and I'll bring some of those storytelling methods back into narrative and kind of fold over back into the process. And it kind of just refreshes my understanding of what a narrative can be. And a lot of times vice versa, you know, I'll use a little more stylized elements maybe in the following doc I'll do right after a narrative. So I kind of go back and forth, but there is something to be said. I do love music videos as well. There's something just very fun about, you know, crafting a really interesting concept. You know, a lot of times music videos are super visual, very prop heavy. You get to work with the artist and just kind of make them eye catching, because usually you only have 3 minutes, 4 minutes to get the attention of an audience. So
What's your process when you're working on a music video? Do you sit down with the artist and find out what they want, or do you pitch them a concept, or does it depend?
It kind of goes both ways. I've done a few different types of music videos, ultra low budget ones. A lot of times will just be very performance based and, you know, just kind of whatever we have resources to film at. A lot of times we'll film at like the artist's house or if they have a studio. Sometimes we'll just go out into the world and film verite on the street and just see what we get, kind of very documentary style. Other times, you know, like when I'm working with like record labels, I've done stuff with Rostrum Records in the past, and, you know, they have, you know, more of a budget and they have more of a, you know, production plan. We'll bring in producers, we'll bring in set design, cinematography, and just, you know, really, really build it out a lot more in pre-production. I can go both ways though, and that's what's fun. You know, it's different. There's not one right way to do it. But I would say if you're willing to kind of take a verite approach, which is like, that's how I started making music videos for really no money, you know, local artists in my hometown, it'll allow you to build a portfolio and then you can kind of build up into maybe bigger clients. So,
Awesome. And for our listeners, what exactly do you mean by a verite approach?
Yeah, the verite approach for the documentary is sort of the where you're filming, but you're kind of just seeing what happens. So a lot of times you'll see a documentary, but the camera will be a little more distant. And so they kind of follow more than they interact. You know, some documentaries will say, hey, could you go over there and talk to that person? But with verite, it's kind of like saying, I'm going to follow you. You set the course. So
less of a talking head.
A little more. Yeah.
Very cool. And just talking about documentaries and verite style, read that you received a documentary grant from the New Orleans Video Access Center make a documentary short. What was that process like, applying and getting it and working with them?
Yeah, that was awesome. That was a couple years back, and that was right after a series of floods hit Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where I was living at the time. And it really devastated the community, and the NOVAC, the organization that gave out the grant, they just really wanted to have people, you know, from the area just tell these stories on the ground, just because the, you know, floods weren't getting really much media attention at all. Mm-hmm. And really just take a personal approach to the stories, because a lot of times it was just numbers of who was impacted, you know, how many homes were flooded. So they just put out a call and they said, if you can find a subject and you can tell a compelling story, we really want to highlight it and we want to give you the means to make it and, you know, talk about what's going on in the community. So the grant process was thorough. You know, we had to show the research, we had to, you know, film a little bit of footage beforehand to kind of show a proof of concept. And it was, you know, a little bit rigorous, but I think at the end of the day, it was worth it, because not only did they help us with the funding, but they also really did a good job with distribution. They put things on their website. They actually had a live in-person screening at the Manship Theater in Baton Rouge. Yeah. So yeah, they had a really nice program set up for it. And you know, different, I've done a couple different grants and stuff, and you know, that's why I was really interested in what you guys are doing. And you know, it's like, some of them you will work on for weeks and weeks, and then, you know, nothing, you don't hear back. Or, you know, I've actually had one where, you know, a long time ago, this wasn't one that ended up going anywhere, but, you know, I worked on it forever. And then, you know, a few weeks later they said, oh, the grant actually got shut down. Never mind. So it kind of sucked to put in all that time. Yeah. But no,
they're good when you can get the funding, but sometimes
and you don't always get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I submitted it was like a 20-page grant application or something crazy like that, and I actually was able to meet with the committee to get tips on my application. They encouraged that, and the woman I was meeting with is saying, oh, this looks really good, you know, I'm not supposed to say this, but you're likely going to get this grant. And I was like, oh my god, that's so exciting. And I didn't get it. It's just like the grant process can be so difficult. But it sounds like you called it NOVAC. It sounds like that process was very, very specific, and it was for a film that they knew exactly what they wanted, and it sounds like they worked well with you.
Certainly did. And I think what helped with NOVAC, like, not only were they great to work with, but they were very intentional about what they wanted. They, you know, and I think it helped that they were also in that community that they were serving. So, you know, you can't always do that, but I think that helped them kind of take a more personal and local approach to the storytelling. Mm-hmm.
So you've also directed feature films, right?
Yeah.
How do you usually go about securing funding for the features?
It depends. I've actually had a lot more success with the documentary than I have with narrative. With narrative, a lot of times it's just super scrappy, run and gun. And I'm okay with that. Like, you know, like I said, I make those movies very much outside of the system with, you know, Hollywood and things like that. And for me, it's just stories that, like, definitely wouldn't get told. Like, my latest feature film is called Panda Barrett. It's about a local rapper, you know, who plays a fictional version of himself, and it was his acting debut, and he basically is grieving the loss of his girlfriend, and so he's going through the motions, having a hard time in life, but then he's also seeing this panda bear in a panda bear mascot costume suit, and no one else can see it. So it's just sort of this, like, weird hybrid of, like, surrealism and drama and kind of heavy subject matter, but also some comedy. And a lot of times those are harder to get funded, because a lot of times people say, no, I need a straight comedy or a straight horror film. Don't blend three different genres together.
Right.
But sometimes that might work. You know, I won't say it won't work, but I find that a lot of times with narrative stuff, they tend to want things a little more straightforward and accessible. And so that's a little more challenging, and especially with, like, not having name actors, that's another thing that I think a lot of times they would appreciate if you had, or if you're able to connect at least. But with documentary, I find it's a little more accessible, and, you know, like I've talked about with the past grant, you know, I did another documentary called Run of the Picture a couple years back, and it was about a filmmaker who was also an Olympic runner, and that definitely had a lot more of a distribution audience, and just, you know, people who are interested in track and field, people who are interested in filmmaking. So it was kind of easier to put those things together. I won't say documentary is easier, but I find that the distribution and funding a lot of times comes together a little more seamlessly, at least in my experience.
And so we focus on shorts at the Film Fund. We have plans somewhere in the future to expand to features, but not quite yet. But just curious, when you're putting these things together, how are you reaching out to these investors or funding bodies or studios for these future projects?
A lot of times it's networking. You know, in the past, I like to say in the before times, before COVID, it was easier with, you know, film festivals. You'd go shake some hands and you'd meet people and, you know, get contact information. And a lot of that was follow up. And, you know, I've toured the film festival circuit for several years with many different films, shorts, features, documentaries. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see different people over and over again and you'll make connections. So I find that helped a lot. And a lot of times too, just like a cold email, believe it or not. A lot of times sending a tweet, like, you know, someone you may not expect to reply will maybe give you the time of day and just take 5 minutes. So, you know, mm-hmm. that's all it takes. And, you know, you may get 500 no's for every one yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it is worth it. It's just time consuming. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of that, yeah, mostly connections. Like I find the more success through in-person connections or sure. at least, you know, something where you have a established history. But I won't say it's impossible to reach out, you know, mm-hmm. through a cold email. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough, but that's part of how the Film Fund came to be. Mm-hmm. I had this very small MVP, minimum viable product. It was just like a one-line submission form on a website, earlier version of the website. And I messaged it to one of No Film School's writers on Twitter, and she got back to me and said, oh, this looks really interesting. Send me an email with more info. And they posted it, and we got a ton of traffic from that first post.
Yeah.
And that was one of the early media outlets that featured us, and they still do. So never, if you're really passionate about something, whether it's a film or any kind of project, really, if you really truly believe in it, I think you can have success just reaching out to people, because you're going to have emotional energy to do so. All those 500 no's, they're going to discourage you a little bit, but I think if you're really, really determined and driven, you can get some success out of that.
Totally.
Unrelated question here. I don't know where I segued to this, but I guess we can talk about music videos again. What was it like having your work on MTV?
Yeah, it was cool. I actually didn't know it was happening when it was happening. It was the artist I made the music video for, Caleb Brown. He put something on his Instagram story and actually saw it like almost like, you know how Instagram stories, they stay up for 24 hours. I almost saw it at the very mm-hmm. end of the 24 hours. And he tagged me in it, and I just didn't check it. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. wow, that's amazing. And it was his record label that put it together and was able to package it and put it on a couple different places, like mm-hmm. MTV Jams and other places like that. We've had, you know, some premieres on other hip-hop websites, Hot New Hip-Hop, XXL, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool because, you know, like you mentioned with the No Film School thing, it's a place that has a very established audience. And all of a sudden, it's a bunch of new eyeballs on your work that mm-hmm. weren't there before. So it's very cool. Yeah.
So you actually missed the broadcast of?
Yeah, I didn't even see it. I saw his. yeah, I didn't know it happened. I saw his Instagram story where he was like filming mm-hmm. it on his phone. So I was like, that's mm-hmm. the way I saw it. But yeah, it was cool.
Okay, well that's still cool.
It was still cool. Yeah. See that. Yeah.
What was your experience like, aside from being like, oh man, I guess I missed that? What did you feel like watching it? What was that experience like?
It was surreal because I just thought back to like when I went to film school many, many years ago, I really leaned heavily into the music video side of things. I, you know, really wanted to do music video. I always enjoyed narrative and documentary, but I did so many music videos in college for mm-hmm. all sorts of artists and, you know, super low budget. I mean, like, you know, a hamburger, like that was the payment, you know, mm-hmm. like here's your lunch. And so, you know, it was really rewarding to kind of see the fruits of that effort build up over many years. So
mm-hmm. we launched a music video contest two contests ago. We wanted to adjust the, so we're producing one music video whenever the filmmaker is comfortable shooting, you know, given yeah. COVID. But we're tweaking the submission process a little bit. So we're interested in music videos too, but right now that contest is reshaping, I guess you could say.
Right.
But aside from that, what do you find interesting about the Film Fund? I know we were talking about how grant applications can be kind of complicated.
Yes, I was going to say, I love the one sentence way that you guys are going about doing things, because I think in the 2021 world, that works. And you know, I don't take that away from it. I'm not saying everyone has a short attention span, mm-hmm. but there's just a lot going on. And, you know, we all have yeah. so much that we're juggling and doing. And kind of like I was saying before with the grant process I did for the grant that didn't end up ever going together, that's always a risk. And, you know, if you invest weeks of time, I mean, because some of these grants take a very long time to put together and compile, mm-hmm. Make your deck and everything like that. And, you know, it was just really refreshing to come across what you were doing and see that you have to do this one sentence, but it has to be very creative. So you can put all your time into like really crafting that. And it's like a good log line, because at the end of the day, when I'm on Netflix, that's a lot of times how I'm deciding to watch a movie. Like, how good is that one sentence log line?
Right.
And I think it brings it full circle. And I find that really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm glad you find that interesting, because I think you can really get what is interesting and compelling and conflict laden really about your story. You can get that done in one sentence. You can't include every detail about what the production design is going to look like, what score you're going to have, but you can include some of that with the funding use. So when those two things are put together, the compelling premise and then the use of funding, how are you actually going to use these funds to achieve that vision? We can kind of get a sense of, okay, this project looks producible and it looks really interesting or funny or compelling. And so it's like a log line. It's like an elevator pitch. Just, you need to tell me the kernel of what is really important about your story in a sentence. And you know, when people go on and on and on and on about their projects, people tend to drown out. So I think having that one sentence really helps us hone in and truly find out what the story is about. And a lot of filmmakers have said that it helped them sharpen their log line too, because they really had to sit down and look at it. And even projects I'm doing, I'm in pre-production for a project and I'm looking at the log line I wrote, and I'm comparing it to like film fund entries, not exactly like looking at it, but I'm looking at it and I'm kind of saying like, oh, okay, if I were, not that I can enter my own contest, but if I were to make this as short and as compelling as possible, how would I do that? So it's definitely good to always keep that in mind. What do you have in store for the future? You have a broad range of experience, music videos, docs, narratives. What's next?
Yeah. So we're distributing Panda Barrett right now. That's the biggest thing. And we kind of like that article I sent you when we were originally talking. Film Independent covered how we were doing it. And we're kind of going outside of the box, like you mentioned earlier, because of COVID. Distribution and film festivals was all turned on its head for 2020. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously when, of course, we released Panda Barrett. So we were kind of stuck in that middle ground of like not really being sure what to do. Despite the film being out for close to half a year now, we've actually never had a live screening. We've never seen the film with an audience. We've never
seen the film because of COVID.
Yeah, because of COVID. And, you know, it got into film festivals, but we did the virtual screenings, of course. And, you know, it's very fun, but it's also different. And so, you know, I've always joked around about how when, you know, it's safe to do so, we'll all do like a ass backward screening that's like at the end of the, you know, distribution thing, we'll do a screening when usually that's the first thing you do.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, we're kind of just playing it by ear, just trying to really go with the flow. So it is on Amazon Prime if anyone wants to watch that there. And then in addition to that, just writing the next film, doing a couple grants, trying to put a documentary project together. I kind of like to always have a narrative thing going and a documentary thing going, and kind of see, you know, race them against each other and see which one takes off. And usually that's what I'll end up going with next.
So, so you finished post on Panda Barrett before things shut down?
Yeah. So I was in post in March. So I was,
so production,
I was kind of,
and everything
like,
was normal.
Yeah. So thankfully that worked out really well. We slid like Indiana Jones right under the door on that one. And we finished like right at the end of 2019. And so, yeah, I was in the middle of editing in March and I was probably about halfway done. And I was kind of quickly, you know, watching everything go down. And I was like, I have a feeling we're not going to be able to do what we thought we were going to do with this film. And so there was a, you know, spell of time where I was thinking, do we just sit on it? Do we just wait? I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. And the film, you know, it is heavy, but it's also kind of comedic and weird and surreal. And it kind of just felt like if we don't release it now, this moment, you know, everyone's grieving in some way, shape or form. And that's something the film touches on. And so I felt like we shouldn't just hide the film away because we feel maybe it'll do better distribution wise if we wait a year, because, you know, who knows? We didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know when vaccines would come. So, I mean, a lot of times you just have to live in that moment, be super present and put it out there. And I'm glad we did, because I've received a good amount of folks feedback on it, and people seem to really enjoy the project. And a lot of folks said, you know, it's a weird movie, because it is a weird movie. But they said, you know, to watch a weird movie in a weird year, it kind of almost felt weirdly fitting. So, yeah, I think it was the only way we could release it, and I'm glad we did. So,
and we can watch it on Amazon Prime?
Yes, yeah,
if
you're in the U.S.
Panda Barrett.
Yeah, search Panda Barrett in the U.S. if you're on Amazon Prime. And if you're international, we do actually have it on my Patreon, so you can actually download it for $5. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
It's a I'm looking at the Film Independent link here, which we can link to when we post this, but it says you did a series of behind the scenes videos for it. Talk to me about that, because I feel like that is something that most, at least myself, but I would imagine a lot of indie filmmakers kind of neglect. I mean, if you have a big studio project, obviously they're going to have some kind of BTS program going on, but if I'm putting together a film, all my resources are going to go into that, but it's, and maybe I can get a set photographer if some photographer friend owes me a favor or something, but I mean, doing 35 extra videos that grew into its own series, that's pretty impressive. Did you have that plan going into the production? Did you have a budget for that? What was what was the plan for that like?
Yeah, that all came together due to COVID. That was me in front of a camera with a microphone talking about different aspects, like very YouTube style, and that's where they all went. They went on my Evan Kidd YouTube channel. If you just search that, you should find them. And it was really simple. I mean, I also had a podcast that I was running last year where we interviewed each member of the cast and crew, and those also went on the YouTube channel. We just did those over Zoom. And, you know, that was another way to show folks who was in the film, get to know the actors, get to know the crew. And it was kind of like the film festival Q&As we never got to have, you know, where you got to chat a little bit deeper about parts of the film, parts of the production, the actors, you know, choices in certain scenes, what they're doing next, things like that. And then the other videos on YouTube that were just kind of me talking to the camera, I would just pick different themes. I would say, you know, here's why I shot this film with these lenses. Here's why I chose these wide shots. And it was kind of like the DVD bonus features like no one asked for. And, you know, I thought about that and I was like, you know, I'm not doing anything. And it was like, especially when COVID first started and we were all completely locked down. I was just sitting in my like home studio office and not really doing much of anything, watching a lot of Netflix. And I was like, well, you know, hey, let me put these videos out there. I have no idea if they'll resonate with anyone, but it kind of just felt like a way to be actively engaged in Panda Barrett during a time where I felt like we had to be passive, and it kind of helped us, I think, just build a little bit of momentum and get folks talking about the project, and also just talking about the behind the scenes, because something else I'm really passionate about is just anyone being able to make movies. And you know, we made this movie for next to nothing in North Carolina. Very small crew. We had like three or four people on the crew. I ended up doing double duty, and I shot the film as well as directed it. That was the first time I've ever done something like that. Scared the crap out of me, but I'm actually really glad I did it. Like, it was a weird growing process, and like to go from, you know, short films and music videos where I had like five times the crew of this, it was really weird, but it kind of felt like a exercise in independence. And so it felt really rewarding. I won't say I want to do every project this way, but it felt rewarding to kind of be very active in the process of it.
Now, did you end up shooting it because of budget constraints, or is that an artistic decision that you wanted to make? Like, you wanted to be the DP?
It was a little bit of both. There's like a part of me, you know, the Robert Rodriguez thing, I'm always kind of curious, is that, and everyone says, don't do it, don't do it. And so, you know, I'd come up doing the corporate stuff, the documentary stuff. I actually shot a lot of my documentaries myself, and music videos. Sometimes I would do that. So I think I had enough experience in those departments to apply over to narrative. You know, in my first feature, I did a like independent TV series. I did a bunch of shorts, and like, I typically would never shot any of those because I really prefer working with the cinematographer. But in addition to the budget, it was the time of year, because the cinematographer I was going to use for Panda Barrett was not available in the fall of 2019. And so the film takes fall as like a kind of, you know, background character, because it's a season of transition and the character is doing a very big mental transition himself as he's grieving. So it was really important to shoot in fall, and especially here in North Carolina, we just get these beautiful fall colors. And so that palette was super important for the film to have. And if I went with the cinematographer I was originally going to go with, I would have to have had to wait until fall 2020. Yeah, and then obviously fall 2020 wouldn't have really been a thing. So, yeah, I was like, well, you know, I guess I got to do it. And, you know, it wasn't easy, but it was rewarding, you know, definitely took more time. But I actually kind of enjoyed the slower pace on set, because I felt like I got to be a little more intentional. I wasn't trying to run around and just go. Because we just kind of knew it was going to take a little longer. So
yeah. And you're doing the setup too, so it's not even like you're waiting on the DP or somebody to, or the gaffer or whomever's setting it up. you're setting it up. So
yeah, a lot of the times. Yeah, a lot of the times it was like me and then my assistant producer, Julia. It would be the two of us just setting up lights and just doing double duty and stuff like that. And occasionally,
so your actual sister is the producer.
Oh no!
Assistant producer.
Oh, assistant producer.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said my sister producer. I'm like, that's really interesting. It runs in the family. That's cool.
That would be. I do have a sister. Maybe I'll ask her if she's interested
on the next one.
No. She was awesome though. She was an assistant producer, and like even the boom operator would occasionally be like, "Do y'all just need a hand?" Because you know, we were just so low budget. That. But yeah.
It's always great when people lend a hand and. They
it's
know
great,
them.
Yeah.
They're there for the project, not for the
they
paycheck
are.
Sometimes.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's nice because, like you mentioned, it comes through in the work, and I think you'll bond better. And I think like I said, the project takes on new intention when you're not just, all right, when are we getting out of here? When's lunch? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Talk to me about the, you said you did some virtual festivals with Panda Bear. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
It was cool. Yeah, I've never done a virtual festival. Actually, I did one many years ago with a short. I take that back. But I wasn't really actively involved in it like this one, because this one, they had an app on Roku, and that was cool. So you could like download, and it kind of felt like Netflix in a way, and then you would just like scroll through all the films. So that was cool because they kind of, I think, brought that film festival experience to the audience in a way that felt accessible into what streaming would feel like for us. You know, everyone's streaming stuff right now, obviously, because it's the only game in town with COVID stuff. So it felt very cool in that way. And the only thing I missed was the networking aspect. You know, that side obviously took a little bit of a hit. There were like Zoom things that we could do, and that helped as well. But just not being able to see the audience, that was, you know, kind of tough. And you know, it's not the end of the world, but you know, I still hope to one day see this film with an audience, because I've never done that. Like I've had super awesome people like tweet at me and send me emails and stuff, and I so appreciate that, because like right now it's needed, because you know, you make this film and this weird time, this weird year that we're in, and you're like, I don't know how people feel about it. And so when people send you something, it's nice. But yeah, it would be very cool in the future to get that audience interaction back. And maybe that's the next $1 million idea, is like finding a way to do virtual stuff with that audience element.
Yeah, I mean, one
feels
thing,
right.
Definitely not cutting edge or new technology, but we had Kevin Mead and Darren Miller on the previous two podcast episodes. They were guys who directed and produced Sunday Dinner, one of the Film Fund winning projects, and they released the film through Leto on YouTube. And it has, I haven't checked it today, but last time I checked it, like 90,000 views, and so there are a ton of comments on the film. And I was talking to the director, Kevin, and he was so excited to have all those comments, and he likened it to watching the audience watching your film when you're doing an actual screening. You're you know, listening for, are they laughing at the right times, are they getting those moments, is what I'm doing, you know, really hitting. And we talked about how it was almost, I don't want to say it's better than having a live audience, but it was interesting because you got why they were laughing. They would say, oh, this is so funny because I think this, or that dialogue, that line is hysterical, or I love this camera shot, or this reveal when they show the boyfriend. And it was almost like getting that Q&A online, seeing the comments or seeing reactions, but then translated into words that you wouldn't be able to get from an audience before. So I think there are definitely benefits to the remote stuff. Having said that, I miss the movies too. I miss going to theaters. So hopefully things start to return to normal soon. What do you have in store for the future?
Yeah. So right now I'm really focusing on writing, cause it's kind of like the only thing really I feel like you can do right now in a way that feels normal. You know, and so yeah, just pivoting between two narrative scripts, trying to get like some funding, some, you know, small distribution, just kind of seeing what the feelers are out there towards projects and trying to see if we can get them either on the road to getting made in the next year or so, maybe once things start to normalize a little bit, and just kind of keeping the momentum of making things here in North Carolina. That's really important to me. Obviously, if someone wants to pay me to go make Star Wars, sign me up. I'll book a flight. But you know, until that point, like I'm very happy making movies here and kind of, you know, reaching out to folks who want to tell stories that are just, you know, a little bit different and just keeping that independent spirit. You know, the Duplass brothers, I feel like, have a really good work ethic and mindset, and they've been big inspirations for me over the years. And so, yeah, just trying to keep that style going. So mm-hmm.
That's great. What advice would you give to filmmakers?
I would say, assume no one is coming to rescue you. I don't know how to explain that in a way that doesn't sound depressing, but if you can wrap your head around that, it actually is really liberating and freeing to the creative process. You know, certainly like apply for things. I do that all the time. Go to film festivals, meet people, network, and like really work on your community and finding folks who want to invest in you. Maybe not for the one project you're working on now, but maybe for future projects. But also assume that you may have to be the one doing the heavy lifting, moving the light stand, holding the boom pole, if you want to get your thing made. And that's okay. Like there's no shame in that. And I think a lot of times people say, that's what I do for my first film, and then I never have to do it again. And so, you know, there is obviously the upward momentum you want to see, but I think a lot of times it's linear, it zigs and it zags, and it's just going to be what you need to do in the here and now to get that project made. And I think if you're doing that and you're staying true to, you know, stories you want to tell, you should be in a pretty good position as a filmmaker.
I think that's awesome advice. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about being driven about a project. It was making me think of that cold outreach. Yeah. When you said, I'll do that on my first project and not the next one. Well, if you're really determined to make all of your projects the best they can be, you're going to step in and maybe hold that boom pole if you have to get it done. You're going to send that 501st email to somebody trying to get funding. You're just going to make it happen. So, no one's going to rescue you. You have to do it yourself. I think Kevin Mead said the same thing. There are a lot of parallels between this episode and that episode, if anyone wants to go check that one out a few weeks back. But that's great. Evan, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning. Could you plug your social media channels for us so everyone can see where to check you out online?
Totally. Yeah. I'm on like Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Evan Kidd. Those are my social media handles there. And if you want to connect, you know, through email or my website, all my work's on there as well. It's rocksetproductions.com. And if you have a question or anything or just want to collaborate, shoot me an email. So
awesome. Thanks so much, Kevin. Thanks, listeners, for listening. That's what you do to the podcast. I want to remind everyone that our winter narrative and documentary contests 2021 are now closed as of last night. Thank you to everyone who entered. Please check your email because we will be sending updates on the judging process there with finalists and winners and prizes and feedback as that all rolls out. But if you missed it, remember that contests happen regularly. So if you're listening to this later, as well, check the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Also, check out our blog that has great filmmaking and producing tips. Check it out. Sign up for the newsletter. Follow us on social media at The Film Fund or at Simply Film Fund on Twitter to stay up to date on what's happening at The Film Fund. We also have an ebook. Lots of great resources coming out on that resources page, so check that on the website as well. Just go to thefilmfund.co/resources. Great tips on the pre-production process in that ebook. And plug in more merch. We have hats and sweatshirts and t-shirts and everything. I'm wearing a couple right now. Here's a mug. Got to pay for this somehow, right? So support the community. Thank everyone again for listening. Thank you, Evan. Tune in every Friday for new episodes. Evan, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Y'all go watch Panda Barrett. It's on Amazon. That's it.
Panda Barrett. Check it out. Amazon. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.